Hey everyone, welcome to PDX Food Stories. I'm your host, Mary Crow, and today on the show I have my friend Lindsay Stranigan. She is the blogger behind Rose Married. She's also the principal and owner of the PR and marketing firm Stranigan and Sons, and she's on the show today to talk about how she carved out her unique job in the food industry, blogging and raising kiddos who not only will eat good food, but are excited about making good food. Later in the show, Sarah and Dirk are back to talk about cherries, how to use them up once you've gotten your fill, eating them fresh, and how chefs are using them around town. Here we go. So, Lindsay, I remember meeting you first through a mutual blogger friend of ours, Anna, from Banana Wonder, and we went to dinner on, I don't even know if it was a hot day, but I know that we went to Little Bird and we were seated up in the mezzanine, probably because we didn't have a reservation, and it was so hot and we were all trying to be very like polite and cordial because we had just met each other, and I was like literally sweating my face off. It was very uncomfortable.
Which is funny because that place, it's a nice place, but yeah, my first memory of it was just like, yeah, it was kind of awkward. Dinner and we were all really hot. I don't even remember what we ate. We split some things. I think a burger was involved.
Oh, I think, yeah, the burger was definitely involved. That burger. You have to order that burger at Little Bird.
You have to get that burger. Yeah.
I got it once, actually, as dessert. I was dining with people, and I guess it was like the fifth course because we had all ordered entrees and no one ordered the burger. And finally, we all agreed, like, we have to get this burger. So, like, as a post dinner course, everyone had a quarter of that burger.
It's like fancy fourth meal. That's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the point is that we met through blogging, which is not, you know, now it's not a crazy story, but even back then I remember thinking like, oh my God, is this happening? I've like met people who are cool and fun and now we're going to meet in real life. And I love that about the blogging community for food.
Yeah, it's awesome. It opened a lot of opportunities. And I feel like the blog community was really small then too. There weren't a lot of Portland food blog. Remember, we started a Facebook group and there was like six of us or something. I don't know, maybe a few more, but there were not a lot of Portland food bloggers at the time. And so it was really fun. I got to know you all in real life and
became
friends, you know, more than internet friends, which is great.
Yeah, and you and I both started blogs a long time ago, and you managed your blog like a business and we're really successful with it. And we both became moms, and blogging both kind of led us into our careers, and you still keep yours up. Well done, even if it's only every once in a while, but you do. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what it was like when you started and what you see the differences are now?
Yeah, absolutely. So honestly, I can't even remember what year I started my blog, which is terrible. I should look it up. I've just had it for a long time. And I was working a really dull desk job. I was working in academic publishing.
Very exciting.
And yeah, very exciting. And so I needed something to like, I needed a creative outlet. And so my husband encouraged me to start. I've always loved cooking, and he was like, "You love writing, and you should write about food." So I started doing it on the side, and it was like I could just daydream all day while I was at this desk job about what I was going to go home and cook and what I was going to write about. So yeah, that's how I started the blog, and it was awesome. Like, it was really life giving, and I feel like it was this fun challenge. And my friends started getting into it. You know, they would read it and use my recipes. But then, you know, more and more, I started seeing. Yeah, I started meeting other bloggers and people who were, you know, trying to make a living out of this, which I never intended to do. It was always a labor of love for me. It was something that I wanted to do because I loved doing it. And, you know, I had a full-time job and all that. So it was like something I had to do on the nights and weekends. And, So yeah, I mean, I always took like crappy photos on my phone and, you know, and I'd write these silly anecdotes about my life, and you know, fast forward now and the blogging industry is huge and people go to conferences and their posts are sponsored.
Well, they're like mini publishers. Like, you're publishing content, you know, you're competing with glossy mags, with websites. And I, right. you know, content is still the most important thing. If you don't have great content, people, you know, they leave your site pretty quickly. But it feels like the photography and the design, those are also very important. It doesn't feel like you can just be a great writer and still take crappy iPhone photos and, you know, have a highly successful blog anymore.
Right. No. And that's part of why it's funny, why I feel like I don't do as much blogging as I did. I mean, one, I had a child, which sort of, which changes everything, but also your time is limited and I don't have the boring desk job anymore. I now work in food, and it's interesting because now that I don't have those like set hours cut out where I'm working, you know, 9 to 5 and then come home and work on, now it's sort of like, you know, I manage.
Right.
Instagram accounts for a living, and that never ends. And so it's weird. I have a harder time carving out time for myself and my project. So it's this.
It's weird. I think that's the dream, right? Like you have this desk job, or you know, maybe you have a different job, and you're not in the industry that you're passionate about, which is food. And then you're blogging, and you're, you know, your web presence and who you are online eventually parlays into working in the industry you want to be in. But then you're like, oh my God, what do I do with this online identity? And like, do I keep this up? Do I fold it? I feel like my blog just like bled a slow death as I was bitten by a shark and bled out, because I feel like I just couldn't let go of that identity, even though I had a job finally in the industry that I wanted to be in. And like, it was just too hard to let go.
Well, sort of like, you know, the dream is, right, that the blog is going to get you the job that you want or the opportunities you want, depending on, I guess, what the outset is from it. And it got, you know, I'm working in an industry I want to be in, and I'm doing what I want to do, and I don't have that boring job anymore. Yeah, so it's this very interesting catch-22, but, like, I still love my blog, and I have years of recipes and content up there. So I don't ever want to get rid of that, and I like the freedom. I like the freedom of just being like, something I cook this week. You know what?
Right.
Maybe I'll put this thing up. And I think that that's like, because I don't monetize my blog currently, anyways, is it gives me that freedom. Just like, I'm just gonna leave this, and I'm gonna post when I want. And I know a lot of people don't have that freedom, especially people who want to like give it a go, or like their blog, you know, be monetized. Like I'm, you know, making money from other things in food right now, and so it's nice because same thing. I've always liked the freedom to write about what I want to write about on my blog and not feel like I totally get why people do sponsored posts, but it's nice that I don't think I've ever done a sponsored post. Wait, that's not true. Maybe a couple. Not many. Yeah.
And then so blogging led you quite a few other places. I mean, I think of you as, you know, you really embody this idea of food is community and activism through food, and you've participated, or you've led, I think, what, like a bake sale right after the election to raise funds. You lead the PDX food swap, and then you also still manage to find time to bring bloggers together over food and, you know, spend time with people while still, you know, taking all the Instagram photographs.
And I think that's the thing about food that's so magical, is it brings people together, and it's such a celebration of culture, and it's a way to, it's just in crazy times of politics, it's a way just to bring people together. And, you know, growing up, I mean, I've cooked my family holiday meals since I was like 12 or something, you know, and I really enjoy that. I love being the person that's like, I'm putting my heart into these dishes, and you're going to all come together and enjoy them. And that just brings me a lot of joy. So it's something I really like doing.
Will you talk a little bit about how Bake America Great Again, how did it get off the ground? How did that idea start? Who did you work with? What were your goals for that event?
Yeah, so I've actually done it 2 years now. And it's always been around the holidays. It's been in December. So 2 years ago, we were in the middle of the refugee crisis, and it just was really hitting me hard, the news about everything going on in Syria, and, you know, people were just, like, flooding to Europe. And so I felt really helpless, and so I was thinking about, okay, well, what am I good at, and what do I know? And I'm, you know, an event planner and also a social media manager and marketer, so I was like, okay, I can throw together an event, and then I can probably market this event. And so I just asked all my foodie friends to bake things, and I can't remember. I didn't call it Bake America Great Again the first year because Trump wasn't a thing then, so that wasn't really, that slogan wasn't in my mind. I think I just called it Bake Sale for Refugees. And we had it at Pizza Original, And it was great. It was super successful. It was awesome. I donated to an organization called MOAS that actually is like out there, like they take ships out and like rescue people at sea. It's really awesome. It felt like I'm a very like tangible left brain person that just felt like, oh, this is like they're actually doing like the work of saving people's lives, which is awesome. And then everything happened with the election. And honestly, I was feeling kind of overwhelmed and just like, I have no idea what, like, it's, every little action felt like a drop in the bucket, right? Like, the tiniest, tiniest drop. But a friend came to me and said, you know, that big sale you did last year was really cool. We should do it again. And I was thinking, like, I don't know. It's, you know, it's the holidays and things are so crazy. And, but she offered to help. And I just, I knew that people would be excited and that we all needed something to come together to do. And so it was like, it was crazy. We sold out. So we had it, we've had it at Pips Original for the last 2 years, called Bake America Great Again. I mean, my donations were, people gave so much. I mean, people, like the raffle prizes were crazy and awesome, but I think we sold out of baked goods in like an hour. It was supposed to be a 3 hour event. I mean, we sold, it was awesome. And this year it benefited ERCO, which is a local the immigrant and refugee community organization. And they're a locally based Portland organization that works with immigrants and refugees, and they're amazing. And they actually came out, and I have since, I now volunteer with them. I helped them throw their like annual gala this year, and I, it was a really good connection for me. So I'm still really involved with them. Yeah, so
I find it really inspirational that you'll put it out there. I think food for people is a safe spot where they don't want to rock the boat or say things that are going to piss off their fan base. And I love that you go for it. But I feel like that's part of your family history. Like, you're from a group of folks who aren't afraid to take a stand for what they believe in.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, we're an interesting, you know, I'm an evangelical pastor's daughter, but I'm also, you know, I don't know. Do we want to talk about politics on this? I'm quite liberal. I live in, you know, Portland, Oregon. I'm throwing Bake America Great Again, you know, bake sales for refugees. So, yeah, I come from an interesting mix. But that's the best thing, is that my family, we've always been told to, you know, be honest. And I think that, like, the interesting thing about food and the influencer community is, and Instagram is, and all that, it's sort of, I thought long and hard about it. I think, you know, I do think about, you know, likes and followers and all that. And sometimes I'm like, you know, if I can't be myself and I can't speak the truth, then it's not worth it. Like, if I'm going to lose followers over saying what I truly feel, then it's sort of like, what is it, the expression, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Like, you know, if you don't like what I have to say. And I think, too, we're in this age, I think people are looking for authenticity, and I think that they're looking for honesty. I think we're all getting tired of the styled shot where everything's like, yay, everything is awesome, because everything's not awesome.
Right. And I think I've seen that in the new crop of cookbook authors, like Small Victories, Julia Tertian. You know, she has a page dedicated in the back of that cookbook to how to get involved, like how to find you know, places to donate food to or cook food. And then you follow her on Instagram, and she has like a Feed the Resistance hashtag. So I agree with you. I think we're kind of done with like the super stylized, beautiful shot, and we're into real life, which I'm going to ask you about in a little bit, about cooking with your daughter. But I also think the PDX food swap is really fascinating, and you should explain that for our listeners.
Yeah, so the PDX Food Swap was, my friend Bethany founded it like 5.5 years ago, and I came to the very first one, and I didn't quite know what to expect, and I wasn't doing much canning at the time, but I showed up with, you know, like 3 jars or something. And yeah, you trade and swap your homemade goods, and it could be canned goods, it could be baked goods, it doesn't have to, you know, it can be anything.
Like fruit, the one that I went to, I remember, like, someone had a bag of Asian pears from a tree in their backyard, and that was worth its weight in gold. They were so delicious. And it's amazing, because it's really, like, I don't know what the right word, I mean, maybe it's like democratic, but it all works. So unlike, I'm in the Portland Preservation Society, and we do kind of like a round robin, like a fantasy football league. So, you know, you go one way and you click, and then you go back the other way. But explain how the food swap works. So if you want someone's food, how do you do this?
Yeah. So what happens, and I think I guess I didn't explain. So Bethany, who founded it, she took off, she went and traveled the world for a year. And so I took over the swap at that point, and now we run it together. We are both freelance ladies who are also mothers, so we're busy, but we try to do 3 to 4 swaps a year right now. And so what that looks like is you show up with your homemade goods, and we have these little swap tags, and we describe it like a silent auction. So you have these tags that sort of list, like, it was made by, you know, me, Lindsay, and this is the thing I made. And we have a little thing if you want to write down if there's, like, you know, allergen, like, is it gluten-free? Does it need to be stored in the fridge? And so then what people do is they walk around and they write down, like, I would be willing to trade you this for your item or what have you. And it sounds stressful. Like, new people who come to the swap are sort of like, oh my gosh, I don't know how this works, or they overthink it, like, and it's just, it kind of ends up being a free-for-all in the end. Like, you go and you look at what people have written down to offer you, and then you kind of pick up your jar or something and walk over to them and say, hey, you said you'd be interested in trading this for that. And then you just, I don't know how to describe it, but I feel like my humble 5 jars of strawberry jam or what have you, like, turn into, you know, I've gotten handmade andouille sausage. I've gotten homebrew, like, sometimes fresh produce I'll get. Yeah, people just bring the most, like, the last one I went to, I got a celery root that someone agreed. I was like, I've never even thought to grow this, and I love celery root. Yeah. You know, so it's just, well, but it's so cool.
I love the community aspect of it, because these are not professional chefs, and you're putting a lot of trust in people, you know, like, okay, I hope you washed your hands every step of the way.
Yeah. But
when you're there and in the moment, it's just so exciting. And the one that I went to, I remember just, like, the diversity of who was there. Like, yeah. Anyone and everyone. You've got families, you have single young people, single old people, you have grannies, you know, you have farmers. It's really fascinating.
And then, it's a group of people. It's a group of people that I don't even know that I would, like, otherwise have met, right? It's like, it is this really interesting mix of people, and I've made friends from Food Swap. I think I met Kumi through the Food Swap. She came to one ages ago, and she brought her naan bread and her various. It was insanely delicious.
You always get Kumi's food if you're at a swap. Always.
Yeah.
It's the first
without way question. Yeah. If you're given an opportunity to get her food, you go for it.
Absolutely.
And so it is. I mean, there's, like, this family who homeschools their children and comes occasionally, and, like, all their kids, like, bake these amazing, like, their children bake, like, challah bread and bring it to the swap. And I'm sort of like, but then, yeah, like you said, and then there's these really hip, like, French women that came recently with, like, homemade bath products. And I was sort of like, and they were very, like, yeah, very beautiful and stylish. And I was like, whoa, are you sure you're not too cool for this? And they weren't at all. They were awesome, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a really good mix. And honestly, it sounds cheesy, but the barter economy is, especially in, like, the weird world and political, like, climate we're in right now, it evens the playing field. And it's really great. It just feels like trading stuff, it just feels, it's strangely empowering, and it's such a celebration of, like I said, of diversity, of, like, everyone's skills and, like, the creativity that is in that room. I'm just blown away by what people make, things that I would never, ever, ever think to make, and then I get to go home and, like, eat this delicious thing. Yeah, I mean, I always joke that, like, the day after the food swap is, like, the best cheese board I've ever had. Like, yes, I just agreed. Go home and I get some goat cheese and a baguette and just eat all the amazing candy that I come home with. So, yeah.
I love it. And so, okay, so then outside of, you know, what you pop up with or what you run as a volunteer, you also have a marketing and consulting business where you, as you said earlier, you do Instagram management, but then also some, you know, general, like, PR marketing management for some really awesome restaurants around town.
Yeah. So I don't even know necessarily what to call myself sometimes, but I'm a marketing consultant, and in this day and age, marketing, social media has become a really big part of marketing. And it all started with my first client was Bunk Sandwiches 4 years ago, and they just hired me to help them kind of grow their Facebook and Instagram and do an email newsletter, and it's grown from there. And actually every client I've gotten has all been word of mouth. I've not had to, like, go after clients, which is really awesome. And also social media is a big need, and I think as it's grown and small businesses, you know, I sort of specialize in small businesses, I mean, local restaurants, you know, I'm not working with national brands or anything. And because I think a lot of that is because I end up being this, half the time I feel like I end up just being a professional organizer.
Right. Yeah.
Think ahead to, are you open on the 4th of July? Okay. If you are, what are we saying? Like, what are you out? You know, like getting them to think ahead, like down the line of, you know, what is it that we need to tell our customers? Are we doing fun specials? You know, like that sort of thing. And then of course, once I get that info from them and then, you know, marketing that and putting it on social media, and it's, you know, that's an ever changing landscape. But yeah, it's super fun. I actually had someone ask me recently if I get paid to eat. So there was like some, you know, someone saw my Instagram and they're like, do you get paid? And I was like, well, I mean, not exactly, but kind of, yeah. I mean, you know, like in order to speak effectively about my clients and, you know, post across their social media, sure, I could hire photographers and have them take all the pictures and they could send them info and I can grab the description off a menu, but I feel so much more connected and involved when I eat their food. And I, you know, it's, so I like taking a lot of the photos myself. I'm not a professional photographer by any means, but I can take a mean iPhone photo. And, you know, I hire photographers for when it's right, but a lot of times it's, if I can go down there and snap a picture of a sandwich and post it, I feel like it's more authentic and I feel better speaking on behalf of the company because I truly know what it is that I just ate and I know how to talk about it and get people excited about it because I'm excited about it.
That's awesome. I feel like when I think about food, you know, all the jobs that are available, the spectrum is really, it's quite a range because you don't have to just be a cook or a server or in the actual physical restaurant itself. But now all this support positions have blossomed up out of basically social media demanding like always on marketing PR, basically.
Right.
Because your customers are trying to get a hold of you at any hours of the day. And, you know, chef owners, they don't really have the bandwidth for this. And ten years ago, they didn't have to think about this at all. You know, they thought about what, like, back to your 4th of July point, they thought about putting an open sign or a close sign out. And now you're getting ahead of those messages, getting the photography ready so that it goes out on the 4th of July, so you're not styling it on the 4th of July. It's a lot of work. And so how did the Bunk offer come about? How did you get started?
So Tommy from Bunk used to come to my husband's coffee shop all the time. My husband works in specialty coffee and has for ages. And Tommy's a really nice guy. And, you know, they would chit chat and I got to know him through that. And I think we followed each other on Instagram. And honestly, I really thank him for this, but he basically just said, I really like the way that you write about food. I like the way that you talk about food. Bunk could use that. And they were coming from a place where they had just worked with like a big PR firm in town. And it just wasn't, they're like very irreverent, Bunk is, and kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it was like I think just too serious for them. They just wanted something a little bit more low-key, and so I met with them and we just clicked. It just sort of from right off the get-go. So it was because, like I said, because of my blog, like Tommy had read my food writing and he thought that it would be a good fit with Bunk, and here I still work with them.
Like going back to your earlier point about you have to be yourself, because if you try to package your content up and have it look a certain way, that's not you, you know, either any offer that comes to you based off what you're pushing out on your feed is not going to be the right fit for you because it's not really who you are and what, you know, being true to yourself. Right. I think a lot of people though are scared. It's scary to be your true self sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, because you're worried about the comments or the likes.
I think that's frustrating. That's hard about our current culture. And I think that if you can get into a gig or a job where you can be yourself, you're going to be happier, right? And there's going to be more longevity to it because otherwise it'll feel empty after a while. And so I think that's why I found the weird niche that I have working with the restaurants that I do, because I only work with people I can't lie. I'm not going to work with a restaurant that I don't like or that I don't enjoy their food or, you know what I mean? It's like I have to believe in what I'm doing. I'm just that kind of person, and I think most people are, you know. And I'm just really lucky that I get to do that. I get that sometimes you have to like put your head down and like you know work at a job you don't love. Like I said, I worked in academic publishing. You know, like yeah. So I put in my time, but yeah, still so unfortunate.
What is your advice to people who, you know, I'm sure you have tons of people who come to you and say, oh my gosh, I want to do this. How did you do this? What should I do?
That's a good question. It's funny. So I'll tell a little story. Years ago when I was out of academic publishing, I was working at a job kind of in Portland Food World, but it was a full-time like office job, but I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. And I was going a little bit crazy, and I told my husband, I was like, I want to quit my job. I want to start my own business. I want to go to grad school. And I want to have a baby. And he was like, can you pick one or two of those things, maybe? And I actually, like, I applied for grad school. I wanted to go get my MBA, and I got it into a program. And then actually at the last minute, I changed my mind because I thought about, like, wait, you know, I thought about what an MBA would mean. And I actually just thought, you know, I think if I just hustle and I put myself out there and I meet people and I go to events and I go to things, like, I think that's going to behoove me more than this degree. Well, I don't need a business degree to run my own business. And that's what I was thinking at the time with grad school. I thought, well, you know, an MBA is such a good thing to fall back on. And I realized, like, you know, I don't want something to fall back on. I just, like, I trusted myself and was like, let's just go for it. So, yeah, I think for a while I was working a lot of hours. You know, I was going and doing things and event planning. You know, I'd work my 40-hour-week job and then I'd go do, like, event planning on the weekends or volunteer things. You know, it just sort of, it felt a little crazy for a summer, but it worked out. And I got to the place where I was able to quit my job and just go out on my own. You know, I had lined up enough freelance work that I felt, like, safe to jump out there. And everyone's different. I don't know what people's safety nets are, but like I said, I think being seen, networking, meeting people, mm-hmm. volunteering at things, like, I mean, if you want to be in the foreign food world, eat out, go to restaurants, talk to the chef, like, get involved in the blogging community, and start following all these people on Instagram, comment on their photos. Like, it may sound weird, but that's the world that we live in. And certain things, like, you know, Feast is such a cool opportunity. They have so many volunteer opportunities. You meet a ton of people at things like that. And I think that, you know, if you have the time and energy to volunteer, awesome. Or even take, like, little paid gigs for little things. You know what I mean? It's just, I think, just keeping your eyes peeled. And networking sounds dorky, but, man, it's all about who you know. Like, meeting people and creating genuine relationships. And it's a small town.
And like, networking doesn't have to feel nasty and dirty. I think, you know, your point about volunteering, like, if you volunteer for any of the events around town, that in itself is networking. You're networking with the event organizers. You're networking with the chefs who you are ultimately hauling their trash away for them. And it's, like you said, saying hi, make the connection, follow them on Instagram, make the comments. And it's so shocking about what that leads to, like, shocking in the best possible way, where you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened. Where you're like, oh, my God, now I did have a baby and I started my own business and I quit my job.
I did most of those things, just not the grad school.
Right. And speaking of babies, your daughter mm-hmm. is probably the cutest little muffin on the planet.
She's pretty adorable. I'm biased, obviously.
What I love about the way you're raising her to love food is I look at your photos and I look at the Instagram stories that you post about cooking together, and you've removed, like, perfection from the equation. And that was really hindering me. My daughter is a little bit older, well, about twice the age of yours. And when she was younger, I would let her in the kitchen and she could do a couple things for me, but, like, I wouldn't let her do a lot of things because A, I didn't want to clean up a huge mess. And B, I just felt like, ugh, I can't waste these ingredients. Like, I'll just do it. And then you posted this, I don't remember if it was a story or just a photo of her making muffins. And the muffins didn't come out that great, but who cares? Like, she made them. She was proud of them.
Right.
And I thought, yes, like, why am I hanging on to, like, ugh, I don't want to clean up a mess. And, ugh, it won't be perfect. Like, who cares?
I think parenting has been a very weird exercise in relinquishing control. I mean, everything from pregnancy. I can be a total control freak, and it's funny. My parents out there, like, we thought you could go one of two ways with this parenting thing, and I've apparently gone the more chill way, which is good. Because I think I just realized, like, I cannot pick my pregnancy, I cannot pick my labor, I cannot pick my child. I just have to roll with the punches. And there are times when I want to control everything to death. I get weird about her sleep, as we all do. But with the cooking thing, like, it brings her so much joy, and it's such a fun thing we can do together. Mm-hmm. And I realized early on that, like, yeah, I remember getting frustrated at her for spilling something. I'm like, wait, she's two. Like, I can, you know, like, I'm just excited that she's interested in food. And honestly, if she helps me make it, then she's going to want to eat it. And so, you know, we're constantly making it. Like, she will eat pesto by the spoonful. Like, she's obsessed with that. It's like a great way to get her, like, sneak those green veggies in. I never thought I'd be that mom that had vegetables and food, but here we are.
I love it.
I do it.
So after that post, I had like a moment of clarity where I'm like, okay, get over yourself. And Ella and I were cooking one day. We were making dinner, like a, you know, crazy dinner out of, you know, a recipe book that I had no business making on a Tuesday night because we didn't eat until like 9 p.m. And Ella was like, Mom, this is fun. And I thought, okay, yes, yes, this is right. And I was so grateful for you setting the example. Because I think people need to see it. And it's funny, I'm sure you get it too. You know, people will say to me like, oh, your daughter eats so well. And of course, like, my daughter's obsessed with cereal bars. It's all she wants to eat. But she'll eat asparagus and she'll eat salmon. Yeah. And I feel like that was just because when she was younger, I was so tired. I just didn't care. I would just take a sweet potato and boil it and then mix in anything that we were eating. Yeah. And so she kind of started early with flavors, but what is your advice to parents who see your child go into town on like a clam pizza at Pizza Jerk and they're like, how do you get your kid to eat that?
Yeah, I know. I'm so happy that my kid is like the kid that picks the pepperoni off the pizza to eat it, like first because it's the best part, not because she's like picking it off so she can have plain cheese pizza.
Right.
And here's the thing, like, once again, it's a roll of the dice. Some kids are pickier than others, and I think that they all go through phases. And I think the thing is that I keep trying over it. Even if she rejects something one day, I'll offer it to her again the next day because, you know, you never know. And I think we feed her what we eat. And, you know, she's not in a huge vegetables phase right now, but like, girl loves broccoli. Every time we go grocery shopping, she like races to the produce aisle so she can pick out like the broccoli that we have to buy broccoli every time we go to the store. Like, can I get her to eat like spinach? No. But whatever. It'll come and go. And I think so a lot of it is just, you know, I don't force it. I don't make it an issue. It's not like you get in trouble, but I just like make her try a bite of everything. And I really praise her when she tries new things. And I try to like really reinforce like the positives rather than focus on, you know, like, I'm not going to yell at her about not eating green leafy vegetables. Like, she'll get there, you know, like all children, given the choice, you eat mac and cheese at every meal. And, you know, and so I just try to keep branching out. And yeah, I think that there's no science and every kid is different. But since we eat adventurously and we go out a lot too, you know, and I think it's really cool to see, like, she does pretty well in restaurants. And like, my husband always takes her to Stammtisch. It's their daddy daughter date spot.
Very cute.
And they all know her name in there. And I think it's hilarious. I mean, not that it's that exciting a dish, but she's obsessed with Spätzle. And I just think it's hilarious that a two-year-old knows what Spätzle is and requests it by name.
Yeah, I don't know. What is that? I don't know what that is.
I mean, it's essentially German mac and cheese kind. It's like a little potato dumpling, like it's somewhere between pasta and like gnocchi. Yeah, and they usually just toss it in butter, chives in. Like, it's really simple. It's really, really good.
Yeah,
you should get it sometime. Yeah, it's nothing fancy, but I just think it's hilarious that Margot knows what Spätzle is.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing with us your story and your tips for getting kids to eat new and exciting things. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
Oh, yeah. And before we go, what are your top three food things to do in Portland for people who come to town?
Oof, top three food things to do. That's good. It changes all the time.
I know.
Right? I mean, it was funny. I was talking about this with somebody last night. I never grow tired of the Bok Bok wings. I just don't. I think they're like classic and delicious, and if people haven't had them before, but we like just going to Whiskey Soda Lounge and like getting like a small cocktail and the Ike's Fish Sauce wings.
That's
like
the secret, because you don't have to wait at Whiskey Soda Lounge.
You don't have to wait. Get the wings. Yeah. Yeah. Same thing if people haven't experienced Portland before. It might be a little touristy, but I like going up on Alberta, and sometimes I do the trifecta of Hollywood and then Bunk and then Salt and Straw. which is kind of insane, but if you split things, I feel like those are all the things, like I said, it's, I mean, it's not exciting to me because I live here and I eat those things all the time, but if you haven't had Bollywood buck or Salstra, you need to.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's like one weird, like under the radar.
The Vadipav from Bollywood is my favorite. That little like potato slider with the tamarind. Have you had this? It is so good. It's dangerous.
That sounds amazing.
Because I think that the buns are like toasted, you know, on a griddle with butter. And then you've got the tamarind.
Yeah.
And then you have this potato patty. Ugh.
Man.
It's delicious.
My last tip would be my weird, and I do this all the time. This is actually what I usually do for my birthday slash if people come down. I go get a drink at Angel Face because it's, I think, my favorite bar in Portland. Their cocktails are so amazing. It's like this beautiful little bar. And then I walk down the street and I get a frozen margarita at the Red Flag, which is one of the diviest bars
amazing.
In Portland. And that frozen margarita will, like, I one is great, two will change the course of your day. So, yeah. Fancy drinks at Angel Face, followed
okay, but
by...
How... I don't... Ugh, this makes me feel very old and lame, but I don't really understand how to engage at Angel Face. And so I've gone a couple times and people are like, oh, you just tell them like what you're like, I'm feeling sparkly and like elderflower and they'll make you a cocktail. But I don't
know. That's true.
Right. But sometimes you just, or in the, I feel like if you just say like, oh, I want a Manhattan, then you've wasted this experience where they're supposed to read your aura and make you the perfect cocktail. So what do you, how do you, when you go to Angel Face, what, how do you order a drink?
That's a good question. I feel like I've been in there enough now, or like sometimes they've made me like, someone there made me a mezcal last word ages ago, which is like, last word is a classic cocktail, but they made it with mezcal. So sometimes I'll just go in and ask for that now because I'm like, well, I told you I wanted something with mezcal and that's what you made me. And I know you like making this drink and it's tasty. Most of the time I usually say like, oh, I like daiquiris. Make me something along. Like I'll give them a cocktail I like and just get, rather than the aura thing. I never just, because yeah, sometimes they're like, I like citrus. I'm like, no, that's too, I'm too particular. So I'm like, I got to give you a little bit more guidance.
Okay. So
than
yeah.
That
so if you're like, I like this spirit and I like this style of drink and then let them do what they do best.
Yeah.
Okay. That is easy. I wish someone had told me that the first time. So I just felt like I'm doing this wrong the whole time. I didn't get it.
That's really funny.
Cool. Well, thanks again.
You can do it.
I can do it. I feel confident in myself. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye.
All right, so we are back with our second, we don't actually have a title for this segment, I guess, like what's fresh at the market and what to do with it and what chefs are doing with it segment.
what to do with it segment.
I love it. What to do with it and what other people are doing with it segment. But this week, because it is the first week of July and it is hot and cherries are in full swing right now at the farmer's market. So we're going to talk cherries.
Let's talk cherries.
So I think cherries, you know, people see red cherries and they see yellow or Rainier cherries and they think that that's it, right? Like that's the variety. But you are lucky at the farmer's market that your neighbor has provided an education in cherry varieties.
Yeah. So our next to Cherry Country at PSU Market. And so they are there year round because they do dry cherries when they grow the cherries during cherry season. So they have something to sell all year. But for just about 3 weeks, they bring in fresh cherries. And so that time is coming up in this next week. And they bring a lot of different varieties. And I guess before I was neighbors with them, I didn't really know there were so many varieties of cherries.
Right. Like it's like Bing is the most famous, but there are so many like Lappinj, Chelans. I don't know. Do you know any other?
Those are the three I know. We see Rainier cherries a lot, but they have tart cherries, which I really like. And then they also have pie cherries, which I think they're one of the only farms that bring those in.
So what's the difference then between pie cherries and tart cherries? Are those not the same?
They're not the same, although you could use the tart cherries for pie, but the pie cherries specifically will... They're kind of translucent, and they have a lot of body when they're cooked down so that your pie isn't runny.
Good to know. I think they and maybe just a couple other people, I want to say, have pie cherries. I bought a bunch last year because I wanted to make, like, the classic maraschino cherry, and yeah. I did it with the maraschino liqueur and put it in my fridge, and... Even after a year, they were not ready, but I tried, or maybe I bought them 2 years ago, because I feel like it's been a full year, and just now, they're delicious.
That's oh, good. Time. Sometimes, yeah. Some wait is worth it, though.
So what recommendations do you have? Like, once you are tired of eating your body weight in cherries, what should we be doing with these at home?
Well, I like to do more savory applications. So bourbon brine cherries is one of my favorite things to do. And also I like to use them in mustards and hot sauces, of course. So more of the savory applications.
Right, because they're so sweet already that when you're adding it to like a mustard or hot sauce, you're getting that sweetness that's going to help cut the heat, right?
Yeah, definitely. So we try to use a lot of different fruits in our sauces, and cherries is definitely one of them.
And then when it comes to the cherry byproducts, the pits and the stems, you have a great tip for reducing food waste and using these two things together. Is that right?
Yeah, so I feel like pitting cherries is kind of the pits. And so I think if you're going to go through all of that work, it's nice to know that you're going to do something else with that. So as I am pitting the cherries, I just sort of collect the juice that drips out and the stems and the pits, the stones. And then I like to make a bitters out of it. So I do have a recipe in my cookbook that walks people through it, because you are working with some of the bark. So you want to really follow a recipe when you're making any kind of like bitters or tonic.
And remind us the name of that cookbook and when it comes out.
Oh yeah. Preservation Pantry, and it comes out September 28th.
Awesome. Yeah, last year I took the pits and the stems and I put it in a bowl and poured a whole bottle of balsamic vinegar on top and then just put some cling wrap and then stuck it on the fridge for probably at least 2 months. I totally forgot it was up there. And then I strained out the pits and the stems, and it's just like this fantastic cherry-infused balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, that's a great idea as well. Anything that you can try to save and keep, I just think is so wonderful.
I also recommend people do not put cherry pits down your garbage disposal. I learned this the hard way last year after processing like 60 pounds of cherries. So that's a hot tip from me to you.
That's a good tip. Put a strainer in the sink. Keep them out of there.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah. So Sarah gave us some really good ideas for how to use cherries in our home kitchens after, you know, we've gotten our fill. But how are you seeing them used in restaurants? How are chefs around Portland incorporating cherries into their menus?
Yeah, so with cherries, you see a lot of pickling, a lot of preservation, which is interesting because it's such like a fresh ingredient. But and it's being used, I think, to balance and accent different dishes. So first up, Eric Van Clay at Taylor Railworks is doing a burrata with cherries, cherry blossom, and shoyu.
Oh my god, sounds amazing.
Yeah. So that's just straight up fresh cherries.
Right, and are the cherry blossoms preserved as well, or are those fresh?
I think that one's all fresh.
Crazy. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. And then at South Fork, Chef Patrick McKee is doing a fried sweetbread dish with pickled cherry salad.
That sounds good. I've seen a lot of pickled cherries in salads and as accents to meat, and I think it's such a smart combo.
Yeah, I agree. And then last of the three chefs I'm going to mention, Aaron Barnett, the chef and owner of Le Moule in St. Jack. Here's a dish from each restaurant. A Le Moule, he's doing a chili glazed pork rib with smoked cherries and pickled cherries.
Mm, that sounds good.
Yeah. And then at St. Jack, he's doing a cherry tart with black olive caramel. And he said the olive and the cherry, for some reason, taste like chocolate together.
That's interesting. Do you know if he's using a sweet cherry or a tart cherry for that?
No. Interesting enough, of all the chefs I spoke to, which is quite a few, no one specified on what type of cherry that they were using.
It's interesting because I see a lot of people on Instagram are baking with these sweet cherries, and it's really tricky because they're already so sweet. They have a ton of water content. But I wonder if that black olive creates a strong contrast. So the sweetness from the cherry is breaking up like that briny, salty olive, and it just works together. Where sometimes when you just bake, I know I've made the mistake of trying to bake a galette with Bing cherries and like juices everywhere. Yeah. And it just doesn't really taste like anything.
I'm glad you mentioned baking, because my artisan maker this week is Annie Portluck of Annie's Pies. She can be reached through her website, which is I Love Annie's Pies. And she contacted me telling me that she soaks Northwest bean cherries in a Willamette Valley Pinot Noir and honey infusion with a cinnamon stick and whole black peppercorns, and then bakes that in a tiny savory rosemary thyme shortbread crust. And tops that with whipped honey chèvre and drizzle of the remaining honey pinot reduction.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it sounds incredible.
So where can we find her? Where can we find her deliciousness?
You can find her at iloveanniespies.com. You can also find her on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, Dirk. Appreciate your investigative work.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's it. That's the show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to my guests, Lindsay Stranigan and Sarah and Dirk Marshall. Everything that we mentioned today, all the blogs, restaurants, chefs, etc., they are linked up on the website, pdxfoodstories.com. Head over to episode 2, Lindsay Stranigan, where you'll find what was mentioned today. I want to thank everyone for their feedback after episode 1. That was really terrifying, putting that out into the world. I know many of you have experienced that feeling as well, and to get the feedback and the support of your friends and family means a lot, especially moms, all the moms that listen, moms of the people hosting and the moms of the people on the show, really filled my heart. Thank you. So come on back in a couple weeks. I'll continue to try to tweak sound quality and all the other things, but I've got a great guest lined up, and I look forward to